This is the Patriots Catch 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
I'm Evan Lazar.
Evan Lazar.
Hello, everybody.
Nailed it.
Joined as always by Alex Barth.
That's a bit. That's a match.
No risk it, no risk it.
22.
Here is Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
I'm doing edge defenders. I know you don't like. You don't like edge as a position.
No, it's not a real position.
It is a real position.
It's not.
It's a real position.
No, it's defensive end, outside linebacker. We use edge because coming into the draft, there are guys that in one system might play end, in another system might play outside linebacker.
Edge.
So, right, but that's going into the draft, and we don't know what system they're in, so we can't classify them as one or the other. When we're talking about the Patriots, we're talking about a system. We know where they're going to be playing.
All right.
You
all
even
right.
just all right. You even all right. Go ahead.
Patriots.
You even just said you have Keon White as a defensive end.
I do.
Isn't that edge?
No.
So you're just saying outside linebackers, and you're calling them edge.
Yeah. That's our show in a nutshell, Alex. Like that right there is our show. If you want like a snippet of what you're going to get when you turn on Patriots Catch 22, that 30-second clip is it. Like that's it right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Is it us arguing over what is and isn't an edge and if that's a real position? It's perfect. So Evan Lazar and Alex Barth with you for the next hour or so here on Patriots Catch 22. We got a lot to talk about. I wish it was about other things, like we were supposed to be out at practice today and talking about real football on this show, but we're going to be talking about what's gone on here, the news with the Patriots losing two OTA practices. There's since been a little bit more information coming out about exactly why they were stripped of two practices, and we're going to touch on it. We're not, you know, it's interesting because when they canceled practice yesterday, this has been a little bit of a roller coaster, Alex. When they canceled practice yesterday, it felt like they were canceling practice to, quite frankly, stick it to us. Like, you're not invited anymore, guys. Sorry, right? Then we got over that this morning with Pro Football Talk reporting that it was because of a special teams meeting, a 15-minute special teams meeting where the league felt like it came across as mandatory, even though things this time of year are supposed to be voluntary, right? That's basically the crux of it. Which just an hour or so ago on Patriots Unfiltered, I was pissed about. This is ridiculous. Like, either everything is voluntary or everything's mandatory, but nothing this time of year is mandatory. It's all voluntary. Whether you go out to practice, whether you go out in the, you know, go work out in the weight room, whether you're here at the facility at all right now, is voluntary. So how can we have gray areas between what isn't and isn't perceived as voluntary when the whole off-season program as an entirety is voluntary? So that piece of it bugged me. There's been a little bit more coming out now from Greg Bedard that it seemed like what he had heard is that the Patriots were here for maybe a little bit longer than the allotted amount of time to hold this special teams meeting. So if that is the truth and that is the case, and I'm not questioning Greg's reporting, but there's a lot of behind-the-scenes details with these types of things.
There's a lot of interpretation.
Yeah. If that's the case, then I think that, you know, that's a violation. You know, you're only supposed to be here for 4 hours per day. If you're here for longer than that, then you're here for longer than that. And that's a violation. But I think where I come from on this—
you can— so the way I interpreted it is, like you said, these sessions are optional, right? Just being here at this time is optional. But I think there's something within, like, for those who are here, you can't just come in and do what you want to do, right? If you're going to be here, you're going to be a part of the problem.
Right.
You're a part of the
program.
Program, yeah. So the problem is, was the meeting mandatory for those in attendance? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, so I think that's where it comes up.
Right.
Versus, I think, because I tried reading through all this last night. It's very dense. I sent it to my brother, who's a lawyer. He hasn't texted me back. but basically, the way I look at it is, like, if you can be here for longer than 4 hours,
right,
but the team can't give you more than 4 hours to do. If those 4 hours hit and you're like, I'm going to go get a lift in, you can go get a lift in.
Right.
So it kind of reads like, hey, at the end of the day, we're going to all meet with Joe Judge and kind of talk about special team stuff. But the way in which it was listed on the schedule wasn't a kind of, hey, if you're still around, come by. It was more of a, this is part of the day today.
Yeah. Yeah, and that I can sort of understand. I still think, and look, when his name, Joe Judge's name, is included in this report from Bedard, and it's a sticking point right now for Patriots fans, we both realize that, right? That him, just him in general right now, is not, he's not the most popular guy on the block. Let me put it to you that way. But with that being said, I still think that the punishment's a little harsh. And I think the main thing is that you can't have it both ways if you're the NFL. You can't hold these offseason programs, insist that they're voluntary, but all 32 teams approach it the same way. And I said this earlier, if you're Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, does Stephon Diggs need to come to OTAs? No. Stephon Diggs ain't getting cut. Stephon Diggs is not getting traded. Stephon Diggs is not in jeopardy of losing his job. He's not fighting for a roster spot. It's just like when Brady wouldn't come,
right,
and would go do his own thing in the offseason and then come back for mandatory minicamp. Those guys, for better or worse, are different. For the 90th guy on the roster, right, for Anthony Firkser, who they just signed like an hour ago,
right,
he's got to be here. Right, like, if you want to make the team, you're going to be here, and I just think that it's such a wonky thing of, it's clearly wink wink nod nod mandatory for guys that aren't Tom Brady's and Stephon Diggs.
How serious are you? That's what it is. Right. You know? Well, okay, it's not option. It's not mandatory, but it's also not mandatory. We keep you on the roster.
Right.
Past camp.
Right.
You want a little more details on this?
Yeah.
A little more tricking in. So Mike Giardi, quote tweeted Greg's report, said, can confirm this and also note that per sources,
oh boy,
the players were aware they were being asked to stay longer than allowed. Did they help alert the NFLPA? I don't have the answer to that as of now. But basically, the players knew sitting in that meeting, hey, this is a violation.
Yeah.
Is what Mike is saying. And still went. So that's a really interesting dynamic. And I'm kind of talking through this. I'm not blaming anybody, but did the players say, hey, this is not right, we're not supposed to be here? Did they go? Did they go and then say something? Like, that's a really interesting dynamic that the players knew that it was a violation. So, and it goes back to your point with Joe Judge.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting in Greg's report, too, that he has that, you know, the league, in the league documents, which he has, that Joe Judge is referred to as a special teams coach.
Yeah.
And that kind of formalizes something a lot of us had expected. So it is interesting that this whole thing's kind of centering around him.
Not great. Not great. And it's not even just about Judge, because I don't want to make him like a target for people, because he's already enough of a target for people.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, the fact that he ends up in the middle of this is kind of like...
Yeah, not great.
Yeah.
And I think what the biggest thing that we were talking about off air, the most important thing, because when this originally happened, I full hand up on this, I was pissed because we couldn't go to practice today. That I'm going to admit that. Like, I wanted to go. I was excited. You know what? We nerd out about this kind of stuff. We get to go watch them play some semblance of real football. We get to talk to, you know, the listeners, everybody, and you get to talk to you guys about it. Like, we like doing this. This is what we're in the job for. This is what we're in. So I was mad about that. But that aside, I think what's more important is that they just lost 4 hours of practice. They just lost four right. hours of practice in the spring. It's clear. Look, I just said that Tom Brady and Stephon Diggs don't, you know, Stephon Diggs, that's not use Brady because he's retired. Stephon Diggs isn't at OTAs. The Bills aren't going to lose the AFC Championship game because Stephon Diggs didn't go to OTAs, right? Like, that's not going to be the case.
Right.
But the bottom line is that you have a new offensive coordinator. You're changing some things. It sounds like if Joe Judge is as involved on special teams that he's calling meetings, it sounds like you're changing some things on special teams as well. And the bottom line is that you just lost 4 hours of practice time. And that in itself is something to be critical about, because you need every ounce of practice that you could possibly get. And at this time yesterday, when it just felt like they were just canceling just to cancel, it was like, well, what, they think they're ready? Like, they think they're, you know, they don't need these practices? Now that this comes out, it adds another layer to it. But certainly it's still in the same realm of, let's button it up here, guys. Right? Like, let's get a hold of these things a little bit more, because this stuff, for a team that's trying to rebuild or retool or reinvigorate, whatever word you want to use, this stuff can matter.
Yeah,
it can matter. And I think that as a Patriot fan, I would be a little bit disappointed in the team that they allowed this to happen, that they are losing two practices. That now, I think the biggest thing, and with this Joe Judge report coming out, the biggest fear that I have is that this sounds a lot like last year.
Yeah.
This sounds a lot like last year with the setup on offense. And the players either not being on the same page as the coaches, the players not agreeing with the philosophies or the methods of the coaches. And this is same book, different chapter. And I think that in order for this team to get where we want this team to go, they need to be clean slate from last year. Just like Bill O'Brien said, right? You need to completely wipe the slate clean of any of that type of thing going on. So it's that part of it, I think, is maybe even more important than the 4 hours of practice time, is that this is the type of stuff that was happening in last year. And now, how do these players that were, you know, I don't think you have to worry about like Matthew Slater, right? But what do you think Chris Board's thinking? Well, you know, what do you think, you know, Amir Speed and Isaiah Bolden and, you know, the guys that they drafted at the end of the draft, the special teams guys? It just, you don't need this right now. You need to get everybody pulling the rope in the same direction. And this makes it feel a lot like last year, that everybody's, there's a chasm, right? There's a little bit of a sticking point there. So that's where we're at right now with the Patriots and the OTAs.
Well, I would just add the other thing too. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, guys on the same page, and Mike G already had it there. The players knew that it was past the allotted time, and
yeah,
you know, did they, or are they the ones who went to the NFLPA, or no, we don't know. Two of the Patriots' four NFLPA reps are Joe Cardone and Cody Davis,
right?
Special teamers.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting wrinkle. And one more thing on the practice thing too that you were talking about. I don't know how to sound this without sounding overly dramatic, so just know there's not a better way to phrase this, but they're OTA practices, I get it. They're non-padded, they're against air, all that. Doesn't this like sort of put pressure on the players now for Wednesday?
Yeah.
Because if they come out and they don't look great, and I know it's OTAs. I'm not saying if like, you know, oh, they're struggling. Like if the defense is making plays, the defense is making plays. But I'm saying if they come out and it looks like early training camp last year where guys are running the wrong routes, or guys are running into each other, or they can't get the playoff in time, and things like that. They're going to get a lot of questions about, do you guys feel like you could have used those extra practices?
Right.
Do you feel like you guys missed that practice time? When I say there's pressure on this as an OTA, I'm talking relative compared to a normal OTA, which has zero stakes, but there is something there now.
This is our first look in at the team, so there was already going to be intrigue about how things were going.
Intrigue, you know, not pressure.
No, but I just mean like there's always going to be stories coming out of that of, you know, what was Bill O'Brien like? What was Joe Judge doing? But now that gets ramped up, right? Now.
Well, that's the coaches.
Right. Now there's pressure on where are they at, right? You know, what does it look like? Where are they at? What's Joe Judge look like, and what sort of his his interactions with players. Like if he's coaching, if he's a special teams coach, that means that he's hands-on coaching.
Right.
If he's leading meetings, he's hands-on. So how are players responding to him? How is this whole thing going? It's another sort of thing that they just don't need. I think that's what his bottom line is it's not, you're right, it's not the biggest deal in the world. It's spring practices. There's no reason to blow it out of proportion. But at the same time, it's just one of those things that you just don't need. You don't need to lose practices. You don't need it to be go this way and have it be because of these types of things. And you just, if you're trying to turn this football team around, this is just not something that you need right now.
Right.
So it's just, we'll see where it goes. Wednesday's going to be interesting. That's for sure. I mean, it was already going to be like somewhat interesting, but now forget about it. I mean, now it's really interesting. Now we'll see what all this, you know, all this kind of shakes out. And special teams is still, as much as they've turned over the personnel there was questions about Cam Accord from a lot of people. I get emails and texts and DMs about that all the time. Like, you know, okay, well, they brought in Chris Board, they brought in this guy, but how, they still have the same coach. So now Joe Judge sounds like he's maybe even more involved than we even thought. Almost like a de facto assistant special teams coordinator or something like that, if he's leading meetings and things like
right.
that. So it's going to be fascinating. We are going to talk about what's going on or will be going on the field at OTAs. We both, Alex and I both wrote OTA previews for the practice that was supposed to happen today that didn't. So we both have some thoughts on what we want to have our eye on and things like that. So we'll get to that as well. We'll get to your calls, 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com. is the email. Let's take a few calls and we'll get into to some of our what we're watching or what how did you phrase yours?
Storylines to watch,
my what caught my eye, whatever. We'll get to that in a second, but let's start with Sean in Vancouver. What's up, Sean?
Hey guys, how's it going? Hope you're well. I wanted to mention something that was on the previous show. We had a caller who was a little discouraged about the Patriots' upcoming season and, you know, saying that there is hope. We can't really rely on that. But, you know, Evan, you mentioned that older fans, like myself, I'm going to be 57 in November,
can remember
when we had terrible teams and we had this rebuilding thing. But, you know, in reality, we didn't, because all the success prior to 2001 was just limited. Like, it didn't continue. You'd have to be a fan of the Cowboys or the Steelers or something like that who had some success and then rebuilt and then had more success later on. So for us, you know, you look back at the 70s with the team that was the first championship caliber team and got screwed by the refs in Oakland. And then in the 80s, the great win in Miami, finally won a game, never won down there before. That team was also a little bit of a surprise because it was a wild card team that went to the Super Bowl, got killed by the Bears. But, you know, that was the end of that. And then in the 90s, Parcells' team was what, 6-10 in 95, and then 96, again, they went to Super Bowl, but Parcells was on his way out, and it wasn't quite a rebuild from before. And then they went downhill. They had to rebuild something that wasn't even there. You know, it was a big surprise in 2001. You know, because they were terrible in 2000, and Tom Brady had the magic from that Jets game, and then the rest is history.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point, Sean. You know, I just, Alex, to fill you in on what we were talking about, thanks for the call, Sean. I think that sometimes a lot of the frustrations and sort of the impatience at times, and I hate to use that word because it has been a couple years now, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's totally fair. But in general, I think we have never really been through this, right?
Like, right.
You know, you dropped off from the greatest run in NFL history, and now you're a team that's back with the pack and just sort of another team in the NFL. And I do think that that's hard for fan bases. And my point was, you know, being honest about myself as a fan of the team. And now somebody that reports on the team, I've never seen them lose. Like, I've never seen them have anything really but success. I mean, even like what I remember of the 90s, those teams weren't always great, but they weren't terrible either. And they certainly had, you know, some moments. And then really my first vivid football memories are of 2001. So all of a sudden, this team, it just never loses, right? You know, you go 20 years like that. It gets to the point where it's hard to be down here. Like, it's
right.
It's hard to just be another one of the crowd. And I think that's sort of where the Patriots are at. And their expectation that were set by the standard that they had with Brady, it's never going to be like that again. Like, welcome to the real NFL, right? Like, this is sort of what it's like for everybody else.
Yeah, they didn't operate really the same way the other teams did. They're 1-32 now, and that's just kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. All right. What's up, Patty? How you doing?
What's up, guys?
Hey.
So can I give you a quick, brief history of my Patriots fandom and my thoughts on what happened with them losing practices?
Sure.
All right. So the year's 1990, and I'm in eighth grade. I wasn't really that big of a football fan, so. And I remember Monday night game, the leading up to a Monday night game between the Giants and the 49ers, who I believe were both 11-1 at the time, and I'd spoken something about the game. And I'll never forget this kid, Walter Garcia, said, "Hey, Pat, I never hear you talk about football. Who's your team?" And I said, "Well, I'm from here. I'm a Patriots fan." And the whole class, like all the kids, even the girls, dude, back then, laughed at me. And it was that moment that I said, you know what? I said in my head, I'm going to become the biggest Patriots fan. And really, who's laughing now? I mean, who cares about the last few years? I was alive to see 6 Super Bowl championships. You know, who cares if his Giants got a couple of them online? But that's whatever, bro. But that's my brief fandom history. And if I'm Robert Kraft, if this whole these shenanigans were due to Joe Judge and his machismo or his ego or whatever the hell you want to call it, I'm going to Bill and saying, listen, after what happened last year and that now we can't practice for 2 days, this guy's got to go. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel as a fan and, you know, if I was in the owner's shoes, but it's probably a good thing I'm not the owner. That's all I got, guys.
Thanks, Patty. Look, I'm always wary, Alex, of calling for people's jobs. I don't like doing that, but Patty having those feelings about Joe Judge, I can't blame him for it, right? I can't blame you if you're looking at this and saying that it's not, it's to that point for you. I think that's a valid feeling to have, but I wonder. It's funny because when we found out that Joe Judge was going to be involved on special teams, I think we all kind of, at least myself, I don't want to say we all because I'll speak for myself, we're kind of happy about that, right? Like that's where he should be coaching. I mean, he's a special teams guy. Like that's his roots. But I think what with him, the issues that come up are when he oversteps, right? When he thinks that he is more than just an assistant coach on the staff and he becomes a little bit bigger than that. And that this is sort of along those lines, not going
to
lie.
Well, I mean, it goes back to, I remember this conversation we had when it was revealed that he was coming back.
Yeah.
I guess if he's going to be here, special teams kind of helping out, overseeing Cam Accord in a more game-planning role, that's the best spot for him.
Yeah.
If he has to be here. But that was kind of my point, is right. After everything that happened last year, does he still have to be here?
Yeah.
And now here we are.
It is an interesting dynamic, and clearly Bill thinks highly of Joe Judge.
Yeah.
Because Joe Judge has gotten a lot of strikes with Bill. And so...
Look, I think he is a great special teams coach for everything here. Like, the special teams, when he was the special teams coordinator, his first stint here was probably as good as they've been as long as Belichick's been
since
here.
Since Brad Seeley,
I would
say.
At least.
Yeah.
I'll admit I didn't follow special teams as closely back then.
I don't think anybody follows special teams as closely as you do now.
He is really good at what he does. Joe Judge is really good at what that job is. You can't deny that.
It'll be interesting to see now that we move forward, because even though, Patty, I can understand your sentiment about Joe Judge, he's gonna be here, right? Like, I can't imagine that after everything that went on last year, like this being the final. I don't know. I just can't see that.
Well, so the other thing here, is,
but what's interesting, you know, just quickly, what would be interesting is, how is it run on the sideline come September, right? Like, is he the coordinator? Like, is he the one with the headset and the sheet, and he's calling out, you know, calls to the guys on the field? Is he the one in the middle of the huddle? Like, you know, look, it's a special teams coordinator. We've all seen what it looks like. Or is that still Cam Accord and Joe Judge is just there to help from, like a lot of coaches say, Monday through Saturday, right? And then on Sunday, it's somebody else's gig. Like, is that the way it's going to go? It's going to be interesting to see how involved he is, I guess, is a short way of saying it. But based off of this, it sounds like he's going to be heavily involved. So we'll see.
Yeah, and the other question, again, we're getting into semantics here.
Yeah.
Did they know the meeting was going, like, I'm saying the coaches who were put on the schedule.
Yeah.
Did they know the meeting was going too long? It was like, we're going to try to get through it? Or was it just like a miscommunication they didn't realize?
Yeah.
Right? Because that also sort of frames how they react to it, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, man, just another thing that they just didn't need. That's all I'm going to keep repeating. It's just these things are things that they've got to button up. they've got to find a way to clean this type of stuff up. All right, let's talk a little bit about OTAs and about the next couple weeks with spring practices. We still get two, so we're still going to be out there for two, and we get the three mandatory minicamp days, so things are going to heat up. There's a couple of things that I wrote about. I wrote eight things, and I'll get to as many as we can, and you can get to yours. I think the biggest one, though, just starting off the top, is obviously seeing at least the basic or the foundation elements of Bill O'Brien's system, right? What is it going to look like? I think there's been a lot of speculation on, you know, certainly on this program, we've talked a ton about what it might look like. But I think the general gist of what I imagine we're going to see is mainly 75% Bill O'Brien, right? Like, we're going to see, Houston early Patriots Bill O'Brien, 2011 Bill O'Brien, and obviously a little bit of Alabama Bill O'Brien too.
RPOs.
But maybe we also see a little bit of doing what worked and for Mac Jones in the offense in Mac's rookie year. Now, I know that comes across as, bringing back a fullback and under center, and maybe that it's not that deep, right? Maybe it doesn't go to formations and personnel groupings and go down that path. But just in general, I think where they're aiming to attack the field. You know, I think what the big thing is with what happened last year, and they talked about it, you know, Matt Patricia openly talked about how they wanted to be a little bit more vertical and they wanted to be a little bit more bombs away. And I think that they looked at Mac Jones at Alabama and saw that he had the touch and the ability to throw not necessarily a 25-yard dart, but throw a touch deep ball, you know, throw a true deep ball pass. And I think that they wanted to get a little bit more like that. But it certainly had more downs and ups, but it had ups, it's up and downs. And I think the main thing was that it was inconsistent. It was just extremely volatile. So my question is more less so about formations and personnel groupings, because I think at the end of the day, Bill O'Brien's going to live in the groupings and the formations that he lives in, right? It's going to be 11. It's going to be 12. I don't think it's going to be any 21. But the question is do they get back to really trying to win between the numbers and within that 5 to 15 yard range versus trying to push the ball down the field more like they were doing the year before? And I think some of the personnel moves that they made in the offseason, mainly Juju, but even Mike Gesicki to be a seam runner, kind of point to the fact that they want to get back to that team that dices you up in the middle of the field.
Well, just big picture here, when you talk about Bill O'Brien, let's rewind for a second. What were the two biggest stories? At least I honestly don't remember what we talked about with the defense last year coming out of OTAs. You don't talk a lot about defense during OTAs. Unpadded practices. Yeah. You don't see a ton. But although there is one defensive storyline I want to get to. We'll get into that in a second. The two biggest storylines last year were the new offensive system, right? Look at that. They're running zone. Yeah. They're running, zone block concepts.
That really carried over.
And the fact they flipped the tackles, that Isaiah Wynn's on the right side, Trent Brown's on the left side. Well, here we are a year later. Two of the biggest things I think we're looking for, and the third that we didn't have last year, is how much is this quarterback competition actually going to be a competition, if at all?
Oh, but I have a take on that.
I do too. But besides that, what's the offensive system going to look like? And you said, we might not know exactly, but we'll get an idea. Are they going back to power run? What kind of personnel are they using? And who's playing where at tackle?
Yeah.
Because this isn't going to be your typical position battle. Trent Brown, Calvin Anderson, Riley Reiff, all three of them can play both left and right. Now, there's strengths for some more at one than the other, but it's not as simple as, hey, there's two guys competing for one spot, or there's three guys competing for, the starter and the backup job. It's going to be start one, bench one, cut one, right?
Yeah.
This is three guys essentially competing for four jobs.
Yeah.
Starting left tackle, starting right tackle, backup left tackle, backup right tackle.
Top swing guy.
Right. And there might be overlap in there for sure, but it's this thing where it's not necessarily a direct, all right, well, this guy's going to play here, this guy's going to play here. There's different permutations of it.
Yeah.
With Trent Brown, let's say it's Trent Brown on the left side, Riley Reiff on the right side, or Trent Brown on the right side, Calvin Anderson on the left side. Well, then who won?
Right.
So those are kind of the two big things we're going into looking at this. And it's funny because it's kind of the big things we came away from last year's OTAs.
The other big thing that I think that we came away from last year's OTAs is that, one, keeps in perspective that it's OTAs, right? And two, points to what I was talking about before about the stylistic decisions of the offense, kind of the big picture philosophies of the offense. Remember who the star was on offense last year in OTAs, Alex?
Yeah, Trey Nixon.
Trey Nixon. Yeah. Right? And why was he the star? Because they were bombing it away to right. Trey Nixon down the field in OTAs. So, one, it's the Maurice Harris of it all, right? It's the fact that this actually means absolutely nothing. And two, it's also just the fact that that was a philosophical shift right out of the gate. Right out of the gate, they wanted to be a bigger play offense, a more vertical offense, hunt chunk plays, things like that. And I really hope and wonder, but mostly hope, that they're back to being more efficiency-based this year.
Right.
And I think that's better for the quarterback as well. Let's talk about the quarterbacks. This is my big thing other than Bill O'Brien, and this is my big take about the entire spring and the summer. I have no time, and you can call in and email in and disagree because plenty of people already have about this. I have absolutely no time at all for your quarterback competition. I do not. I do not want to see a quarterback competition. I don't want to waste time with the quarterback competition. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about how it pushes. Oh, it's going to push Mac Jones. This is going to get the best out of
because they haven't tried pushing Mac
Jones. You know what's going to get the best out of Mac Jones? Getting him ready for the season. How about that? How about he's on his third coordinator in 3 years in the NFL? He's in another system again. It's certainly going to have some overlap to his rookie year system. I'm not going to deny that. But in general, another system, another voice, another guy leading the charge, a guy that we think is going to be good at the job. I'll put that aside. All that, I've seen two quarterback competitions in my time on the beat already because of the situation that we're in. One of them was a legitimate competition. That was 2020 COVID year Cam Newton versus Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer.
Which Cam Newton won
by
decidedly.
Default. By default.
He won that in a first round knockout.
He won it by default. But with that being said, they wasted, I would say, there was no spring that year, right, because of COVID. They wasted like the first 10 days of training camp on a competition. On rotating, everybody gets a turn, right? Everybody gets a turn, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. I don't think the Cam Newton Patriots, that roster was in shambles. It was not
that was beyond Cam.
That was not a good team. But I still wonder, to an extent, if they had just came into camp knowing that Cam Newton was going to be the starting quarterback and didn't try to convince themselves that Jared Stidham at that stage or ever was a starting quarterback in this league, how much more creative, how much more could they have put in, right? In terms of the running elements is what I'm talking about.
And how much, even more than that, how much more comfortable would Cam have been with some of the receivers?
Because
it was definitely a feeling out process early on.
Right. And he was already behind the eight ball because of how short the off season and the training camp
was. And I don't even think, he didn't sign until like July.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah.
It wasn't a full camp.
Yeah,
and then they wasted the time trying to figure out, who's the starter, when it was pretty clear the only guy that had any chance to start in the NFL that season for the Patriots is Cam Newton. So that's one. The other one that I witnessed was obviously Cam versus Mac, right? Which wasn't really a quarterback competition again, because Cam would get 4 reps and then Mac would get 25 straight, right?
But yes and no. Cam would get 4 reps, Mac would get 25 straight, but Cam would get 4 reps with the starters and Mac would get 25 with the backups.
Yeah.
It didn't shift till the end of the year.
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off here, but
it's also a waste of time. That's my point.
But here's the thing about that one. If you are somebody who thinks Mac's not the best option, right? They should go with Bailey Zappi, they should go with Malik Cunningham, and somebody somebody brought this up in the chat. It's the best player plays.
No.
But wait.
I'm just kidding.
That's sort of what that 2021 battle was.
Yeah.
Mac, I don't think it was a battle. So you said before, right? They wasted time because they didn't know who their starter was going to be early on.
Yep.
I think what happened in 2021 was they did know. I think they went into camp fully ready for Cam Newton to start that season and Mac Jones to begin the year on the bench. And Mac played so well, they had no choice.
Okay.
But to say, all right, we have to now start giving this kid a chance with the starters. So could that be the thing that happens? So here's the thing. There are two different kinds.
Yes. And that's sort of what I'm driving at, too.
Right.
And I'm glad you kind of summed it up that way.
Yeah.
But I am leaving the door open for Bailey Zappi. If Mac Jones has a rough camp, if Mac Jones has a rough start to the season, is where I'm really at with it. Like, if the first month doesn't go well, and they're 0-4 coming out of September, and it's just clear that this wasn't all just Matt Patricia being Matt Patricia. This is also just Mac is maybe just not the guy, right? I'm leaving that door open. But going into the season, I don't want to hear that the best player will play. I don't want to hear that, we got to, Mac, you got to push him. We got to see what it's – no. Good teams don't do stuff like
but
that.
But here's what I'm
saying.
Bottom
line.
So, again, the 2021 was like a true when people think of quarterback competition. Both guys going back and forth with the starters, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, they need to get Mac ready.
Yeah.
That Mac needs to be working with David Andrews and with Juju Smith-Schuster and Hunter Henry and Mike Gesicki and that whole group.
Yep.
Right? That's what he needs to be doing.
All the time.
But at the same time...
Down at Brookline, whatever the high
you
school
said,
is.
You said you want to leave the door open for Bailey Zappi.
I want to leave the door open...
I'm going to rephrase that.
I'm leaving the door open. Me too. I'm leaving the door open because from all the tea leaves, I have to, right? Like, I can't ignore the fact that the head coach of the team didn't say his name for like 6 months in the offseason, right? So I can't leave I have to leave it open because it is a possibility.
Well, no, but there's a difference here. There's a difference between what we think they should do and what they will do.
Yeah.
I'm saying even what I think they should do, and this is me as a Mac Jones guy.
Yeah.
I'm not leaving the door open for Bailey Zappi, but I'll leave it unlocked. If he can open it.
Right.
Like, here's the thing. Drill Mac Jones with the starters. Give Mac Jones all the high impact reps, all of that. But if on that second field, Bailey Zappi looks so damn good, that you can't help but wonder what happens if we plug this guy in with the starters. If it gets to that point, I'm not opposed. But I don't think it's a true quarterback competition. Everything should be set up for Mac Jones to be getting ready for the season. The only reason Bailey Zappi should come into the conversation is if it becomes clear Mac Jones maybe isn't the best option for the season. Because as of right now, everything we know, Mac Jones is the best option. And it's not close. So just get him ready. What they should be focusing on.
I just think that a lot of the time with these competitions and with the best player should play mentality and the back and forth and all that kind of stuff, what you end up doing is you end up not fully preparing either guy.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, it's that old saying, when you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback.
Right. So, and what it also reminds me of is we've covered a lot of training camp practices at this point and some joint practices too. And sometimes they've had joint practices, and I go back to like Carolina last year.
Yeah.
Right. Where it was Darnold, right? Darnold and Baker. And they had a quarterback competition. It was two former failed top five picks going head to head. And they had a quarterback competition, and they got into the season, and it was Baker, right? Off the top, I think, or I don't even remember.
But I don't remember either.
The bottom line is it didn't work out for either one of them. They both sucked, right? And maybe they just both suck. Like, maybe they're just both bad players. Like, I'm leaving that out there. But I am of the school of thought that I believe that if they had fully prepared Baker Mayfield or fully prepared Sam Darnold and not wasted their time going back and forth, it would have been better. And this is why a lot of teams only really have a competition for like a week, right? And then they call it,
Right.
Because somebody at some point in time, you have to start getting the guy ready. And at this point, I want Mac Jones to be the guy. I want everything this offseason to be pushing those chips in the middle of the table of Mac Jones being the guy. Where I will open the door for Bailey Zappi is if they start 0-4, they start 1-6, if they start terribly.
Yeah.
And now they have decided that Mac is not our future. We are going to draft another quarterback. We're going to be in the quarterback carousel again next offseason. And if they want to give the last 7-8 games to Bailey Zappi to see, well, maybe it's Bailey.
Just to see, right. Just to find out. Because you might as well know.
Fine. But this year is about deciding on Mac Jones, and getting him into a quarterback competition in the summer does him no good.
But I I'm right there with you. It should be Mac Jones. It's his job. I wrote this last year after the Bears game.
Yeah.
It's still Mac Jones' job, because it was his job to lose, and he didn't lose it. He didn't. He did not lose it last year.
Right.
Now, I'm with you. I don't know that they'll see it the same way. I would not be surprised if we get out there in a Tim and Bailey Zappe splitting reps 50-50. I don't think it would be the right move, but I could see it.
It will bug me.
It'll bug me too, but could you see it?
I could 100% see it. And that's why I wanted to get this take out, because I could see it coming from a mile away. And what I think is going to, again, what I will repeat, what I think is going to end up happening if you do that to yourself is that neither Mac Jones nor Bailey Zappe will play well.
It's going to look discombobulated again.
Yeah.
Because there's not going to be that chemistry.
Right. So let's like you said, when you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. Even if this is really what it is to me. Even if Mac Jones isn't the guy, I want them to act like he's the guy. I want them to play the part for now. And if you decide come October, come November, like this just isn't working here and this isn't the path that we're going to go down long term, then maybe you get Bailey some games late in the year to see what he's got. So that way there you have a full picture of how you're going into your offseason to jump back on the carousel. But for right now, you act like he's the unquestioned QB1. He acts, and I want to see that out of him too. Like, I want to see him acting like he's the unquestioned QB1. Him leading the pack, him leading the offense, him playing with confidence. Like, those are the types of things that I want to see. And look, I'll admit, and I think you're in the same boat, Alex, but maybe I'm wrong, I'm more confident in Mac Jones than other people are, I think. And I'm willing to live on that hill. Like, I'm willing to die on it. I mean, I think he can play in this league. I think that he can be a starting quarterback in this league. Do I think that he's ever going to be Patrick Mahomes? No. But do I think that he could be at least Kirk Cousins in the NFL if things are how they should be? Yes. And I think there's a lot to be said for that level of quarterback. Like, yes, you could jump back in the carousel and go after the lottery ticket, right, and try to chase a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen.
It goes back to something we said earlier. Patriots fans are already fed up, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to spend two decades doing that? Because that's usually how long it takes.
Right.
I'm with you on Mac Jones. Look, I think, and I've given this speech before, if you're sitting here on May 25th, 2023, and you're comfortable definitively saying Mac Jones is the answer, or comfortable saying Mac Jones is not the answer, you're kidding yourself.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. We haven't seen enough to know. Something is an anomaly. Either 2021 is the anomaly or 2022 is the anomaly.
Yep.
If I had a guess, and I'd like to think I've watched a little bit of football in my life, I have a decent understanding of how these things work.
Yeah.
Nobody's right every time, but I've seen the game once or twice. I think 2022 is the anomaly.
Yeah.
I think he's closer to the player he was as a rookie than he was last year. I go back to a comp, Evan, both of us made a lot coming out of the draft. And that's as the ceiling. And that's Matt Ryan.
Oh, yeah. That was our ceiling, huh?
I still think that's on the table if they put the right pieces around him.
That's the ceiling now, it feels like.
Still think that's on the table if they put the right pieces around him.
Does he get Sark and Julio Jones, too, or is it just Matt Ryan?
Well, okay. I wanted to ask you this earlier.
Kyle Shanahan? Or?
Well, hang on. I wanted to ask you this. That actually reminds me of a question I meant to ask you earlier. We didn't get to it.
Yeah.
Is Bill O'Brien, he's had three offensive coordinators now, or will have three. Is Bill O'Brien the best offensive coordinator Mac Jones has had?
Well, somebody actually asked us in that email, Josh McDaniels or Bill O'Brien. I think that Bill O'Brien, it's a good question. I think Bill O'Brien's maybe a little bit more creative, like a little bit more innovative.
Yes.
I think it's a better word.
I would say more than a little.
I think that he's somebody that truly enjoys the evolution of the game, and like I think he has a lot of fun. Like I think, you know, I talked to the last time we had assistants, I talked to Will Lawing, the new tight ends coach who came with Bill O'Brien, was in Houston with Bill O'Brien, then he was with Alabama with Bill O'Brien. So
he was at Penn State with him.
Yeah, so he's followed him everywhere. Mm. And the one thing that, you know, we were talking a little bit about Alabama and everything they did there, and a couple of things that he said was, you know, Bill's really good at, we've had some very, very different personnel pretty much everywhere we've gone, you know, like it really hasn't been, you know, and at Penn State it was like Christian Hackenberg, right? Then it was Deshaun, obviously, and Hopkins.
Two very different quarterbacks.
And Houston, and now it's Bryce Young, right? And what they've had at Alabama. And he said, you know, that they really ran things through the strengths of the personnel. And some of that was drastically different.
Right.
And I think the other thing that he mentioned, you know, we were talking a little bit about the RPO package at Alabama, and I was just like, you know, what makes it, it's this, it's held to a very high standard in terms of RPO.
The Alabama RPO package, for people who don't know, is like
the gold standard.
That is when people want to show what an RPO is, how an RPO is supposed to work, they show Alabama.
Yeah, so it's one of the gold standards of it for sure. And he said that was...
It is like the Titleist Pro V1 of RPO packages.
I don't know what that means.
That's like the golf ball.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
It's like $3 a ball.
Okay. Is that expensive?
Yes.
Okay. So, is that expensive? No idea. The RPO package, and he said, well, that was already there, you know, that we kind of adopted that and kind of learned about it and all those types of things. So I think that Bill O'Brien's a little bit more open to new ideas, I guess, you know, and a little bit more innovative and a little bit more cutting edge, if you will, than Josh McDaniels. I do think that there's something to be said for the foundational elements for McDaniels. Like, I think that his core set of plays and like his core playbook is going to be sound in football 100 years ago and 100 years from now, right? Like it's always going to work. And there's something to be said for that.
To go back to the original question, is Bill O'Brien the best offensive coordinator Mac Jones ever had?
Yeah.
That, and I know you're a guy that really likes and really respects Josh McDaniels.
Sure,
I'm not
do.
Knocking you for that, but that sounded like a really long way of saying, yes, Bill O'Brien is better, without actually saying it, because you didn't want to say that about Josh McDaniels. Am I translating correctly?
They're just different cats. I don't know. They're just different. Like Josh is
okay.
Josh is a traditionalist, right? Like Josh is under center, fullback.
Who is
like,
better for Mac Jones? I'm not saying who's a better offensive coordinator. Who's
I would say probably Bill O'Brien, because you know what? I think another big difference between the two of them, too, is Bill O'Brien's a little bit more of a gunslinger. Like Bill O'Brien shoots from the hip a little more
just effort. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I don't mean that as like, you know, last year, like they're chucking the ball 50 yards down the field and throwing picks. I don't mean it like that. I just mean like he's a little bit more willing to try stuff.
He'll put his cards on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and yeah.
To go back to the original question
That's the PG way of putting that.
To go back to, I know. Yeah. To go back to the original way, the original question of, I still think.
Yeah.
The true ceiling that Matt Ryan comp is still there, and you had said, does he get Steve Sarkisian? Does he get Julio Jones?
Well, he doesn't have Julio Jones yet.
Well, what have we spent this entire offseason yelling about more than anything else?
Get him Julio Jones.
Right. So that's my point. I'm not saying he's going to be Matt Ryan this year, but I'm saying if they get him everything they need to get him, I think they can.
Yeah.
And that is part of the reason I've been so blue in the face about go get Jerry Jeudy. Go get one of these guys. And I'm still going to be that. We'll see how it goes this year. But like, assuming he comes back, I'm going to be saying that next year, right? Let's trade up in the draft. They're not going to be able to get Marvin Harrison Jr., but go get Xavier Worthy.
It's
go get a guy like that.
It's going to be really interesting to see what if Mac thrives more in Bill O'Brien's system than McDaniels' system.
But let's say he does.
Because McDaniels' system is very much like you play my system. Right?
Yeah.
Like, Cam Newton was like running the same drought back concepts as Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, just like, you have to figure this out. Whereas I think Bill O'Brien is a little bit more, like I said, a little bit more cutting edge, a little bit more willing to evolve.
So, to go back to the point, Bill O'Brien's here. Let's say they click this year, it works.
Yeah.
Then next year, they go out and they add any wide receiver number one you want, right? A real wide receiver one. What are we going to be sitting here saying the expectations are for Mac Jones?
Hi.
Exactly. That's my point.
All right, let's move on from this, and I'm sure we got some people a little bit angry, so if you want to call in and yell at us about the quarterback competition, which I still can't figure out for the life of me.
I think people are just annoyed that we talked about it, which I'm kind of glad.
I just can't figure out for the life of me why people want a quarterback competition. Like, that doesn't mean – that's not a good thing, folks. It's not a good thing if you have a quarterback competition. It means both of your guys stink, all right? Like,
they weren't having quarterback competitions when they were winning six Super Bowls.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Maybe backup quarterback
competitions. You don't go to Kansas City OTA. And they're like, oh, what about that quarterback competition today, guys? No, they don't talk about those types of things. Anyways, what else? So with OTAs, I think the other big thing, look, the rookies is always a popular one. I think we're all looking forward to seeing Christian Gonzalez, even seeing, you know, DeMario Douglas and Kayshon Boutte, right? Like, that's always out there. And the rookies are up there. how they replaced Devin McCourty in
that's
the
big
end,
one for me on defense.
On defense, and that I think we can really start to glean some things from OTAs just because of who is playing what position, right? Like, it's not necessarily you know, game planned. It's not, we're not even close to anything like that, but we can see who's lining up where, right? And that's going to be a big tell. And I'm fascinated by it because there is a couple, there more than a couple. There's a probably half a dozen ways that I can think of that they could do this, and then there's probably another half a dozen that I'm not thinking about that they are, right? Like,
right.
So we're talking about a lot of different variables and a lot of different ways about going about things. I think the really, really like off the beaten path things that people have come up with, for example, like Jonathan Jones moving to free safety. I don't think that that's something that you do right away. I don't think that that's something that you jump to immediately. I think that's something that you might go to if you are giving up big plays all over the place in September, and you have to figure out something else, right? Like, you have to come up with a different idea. I think for right now, what I think they're going to try to do is really not put too much on one guy's plate to play the single high role all by himself, and kind of be a little bit more unpredictable, like less predictable, I guess is a better way to put that, right? Because I remember Devin McCourty, shortly after he announced that he was retiring, he actually tweeted this out, that one of the biggest things for him, looking at their defense, was opposing offenses knew where he was going to be. Like, he was going to be in the deep part of the field, right? Like,
right.
Everybody knew that that's where Devin McCourty was going to be. Now, with Kyle Duggar, with Adrian Phillips, and Jabril Peppers, and I do believe that we're going to get out there and Jalen Mills is going to be a safety. I think he's going to be working with the safeties.
Same.
Jalen Mills with the safeties, they're a little bit more interchangeable. Like, they have that potential to be a little bit more versatile, a little bit more mix and match and interchangeable. And my guess is that that's what you're going to see a ton of. It's going to be a lot of post-snap rotations, not a whole lot of static structure. It's going to be two high into one high. It's going to be one high into two high. And they're really just going to spin the dial, which they do a lot anyways. But I think at the end of the day, what was always, most of the time, is Devin was spinning the dial into the same spot, right?
Like, right.
So they might start in two high, but when they rotate into single high, they know that the buzz player is going to be Kyle Duggar and the single high guy is going to be Devin McCourty. Now it could be either one of those safeties, which maybe does present a little bit more of unpredictability. But that's where I think that we're going to see most of it. So I think we're going to get out there at OTAs next week and everybody's going to be playing free safety. It's not, and I think that will be a big storyline.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You named a bunch of different possibilities. Is it Kyle Duggar? Is it Jonathan Jones? Is it Jalen Mills? Is Miles Bryant back there? Are they going one high? Are they going two high? I think the reality is all the above. I think it's going to be a little bit of everything. The real question is, when they get down into goal line, what does it look like?
Right.
If they do a two-minute drill, when it's third and 10, fourth and 10, what does it look like? That's really the question. But I think it's going to be a whole bunch of different looks. I don't think they're going to stick with one thing, and that's going to be how they replace Devin McCourty.
Yeah, I don't think you replace a player of that caliber just by saying, you got it, Kyle Duggar, right? Like you're Devin McCourty now. Like, I don't think you can do that because there's just so much downloaded into the computer from Devin McCourty's perspective for all the years that he was back there that I think it's so hard to just ask one guy to replace a player like that. I mean, you're asking one guy to basically replace a borderline Hall of Fame player, a guy I would put in Canton, but maybe that's an argument for people that aren't as biased as me on that one. But in general, I think that's not how you do it. I am really interested to see when we get into the season and obviously, keep track of this type of stuff. Like, do they get more into the two high family? Like, are they more of a cover two quarters based defense instead of what they've been so heavily a post safety cover three, cover one defense for Devin McCourty's career? Do they go on that trend a little bit more? Because that's the trend right now, right? It's the Fangio tree. It's college style stuff. It's tight fronts. It's, so much of what the league is doing now is to try to slow down, obviously, these quarterbacks and these passing offenses. And too high is getting extremely popular. And even the Patriots have been a little bit more too high heavy, certainly in certain situations in particular, than they have been in the past. And that's actually not you know, Bill's played some too high in his career. Like, he's been a base too high guy. Early 2000s, they did it a little bit more than they do now.
Didn't they do it when Rodney was here?
Yeah, 80s with the Giants, they were.
Well, I mean, that you can't really use that. It's so
why not?
Long because it's so long ago. It's,
cover two is cover two. Doesn't change.
Just got distracted because the Falcons ran a surprise onside kick on the TV behind you.
It's okay. I was watching Michael Vick highlights when callers were calling in and complaining about how bad the team was.
Michael Vick ruled.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm interested to see that. I'm trying to think. This is our first look and just kind of moving away from the defense for a second, because to be honest with you, as much as I wish that we could talk about like storylines on the defensive line and stuff like that, there's no pads, there's no contact. So I'm not going to get too caught up in like what Keon White looks like in these spring practices. You know, I think we'll talk about like what he looks like physically, like,
right.
You know, that sometimes pops out at you, like, even though he's not the same player. But Sam Roberts last year, I remember being like, okay, that guy's gigantic. Like that's an NFL defensive lineman. So maybe we'll see some of that. But the other thing that I think will be really interesting about what happens is we've not seen Juju or Mike Gesicki like in a Patriot uniform yet.
Right.
Like this is sort of our first look at that and really our first semblance of what their roles are going to sort of be. And I think in particularly with Juju, how are they going to make him the high volume guy? Because he's clearly here to be the high volume guy, right?
You know, right.
He's going to be a guy that, in theory, should have 100 plus targets, 75 plus catches. Like he had 90 last year, catches wise with Kansas City. So he should be a high volume guy. First time really kind of seeing what that's going to look like. What do you expect? I guess out of this Juju thing, because I think a lot of it is we almost like have forgotten, not forgotten, but. I think we talked so much about some of the other guys that Juju in particular, we haven't really talked about him a lot lately. You know, it's kind of with the draft and everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, exactly what you said. I think he's going to be in the slot. I think he's going to be that guy. I think he should be on pace to catch 100 footballs. So
yeah.
We'll see if there's confirmation of that. The one other, and so I don't know if we'll see him. You kind of reminded me of this with Keon White, though. I want to bring this up. I talked about how this is really more so OTA is more about learning usage than seeing like who's beating out who for what position.
Yeah.
Is Marte Mapu going to be on the field? Like, I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
Right. Yeah. Cause he's coming back from that shoulder surgery. Yeah. I really would have liked to see how they were using him.
Yeah. Hopefully like maybe he's healthy enough to like go through like positional drills and stuff like that. He's definitely, I would be absolutely shocked if he's participating in anything team related. But maybe he's, and when I say team related, I mean like 7-on-7, 11-on-11. If maybe we get to see him go through a positional drill, which helps us dictate what position he's drilling.
Right.
So maybe we get to see that. Those are always interesting. You know, who's changing positions, who's working out with what, especially with those types of guys like Mapu, kind of like blur the lines between a couple positions of where he could potentially be. One last thing that I had on my list, and you know, just a general take on this as well. I might write about it at some point because I think this is such a big. We were just talking about Julio Jones. Getting Mac that guy, Tyquan Thornton. Like this is a low key big deal for this offense. Is making Tyquan Thornton work? Like making him a thing. It's making Mac Jones work is number one by a long shot, but making Tyquan Thornton work might be number two.
Don't they kind of go hand in hand?
Yeah.
To make Mac Jones work,
I mean,
don't you have to get Tyquan Thornton going?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of where I'm coming from. So. I think that when you look at Bill O'Brien, he's actually had two receivers that have similar body types to Tyquan Thornton. One of them is Will Fuller with the Texans. Will Fuller was like 6 feet, 185.
I was surprised. Will Fuller to me always seemed like a much bigger guy than
me
that.
Too.
Yeah,
but he's not. I looked this up at what he weighed in at the combine. He seemed to play bigger, and I think that the difference. You know, I went back and watched. Will Fuller's big season, I think it was 2019 with Bill O'Brien.
Yes.
Or 2018, 19, something like that. And the one thing that definitely stood out was, you know, they would give him these opportunities on the outside to just go one-on-one. And, 2020, I think, wasn't that
Was his big year, but that wasn't O'Brien.
O'Brien for the first 4 weeks of the season.
Oh, you're right.
So I looked at 2019.
He had a pretty good year in 2019, too, actually.
So,
it wasn't as good, but pretty good.
there were a lot of times, and this is sort of what I've said about Taekwon in the past, where he's just going one-on-one against press on the outside and wins, right? You know, and I think the big thing, not only getting off the line of scrimmage, but being able to finish through some contact at the catch point was something that stood out with Will Fuller. If Taekwon is going to be an 800-yard plus, like, a really good receiver, not just a field stretcher, not just like this gimmicky thing. If he's going to be like a high volume, really, really good receiver, he's going to have to add that to his bag. And I think that's where putting on weight, developing his routes, you know, developing his strength down the field, like that's where those things come into play from him on an individual basis. But there was a lot of other things that O'Brien did with Will Fuller. And the other guy that has a similar body type is Jameson Williams, right? And I think you look at those two guys, and some of the alignments and some of the ways that Bill O'Brien, A, either created foot races for them in space, or B, just simply got them off the line of scrimmage without them having to make a move off the line of scrimmage and press, right? Like that, just a stack, you know, where it's one guy in front of him and him off the line of scrimmage. So it just kind of creates that natural separation, that natural bubble of space, like a pick or a bunch formation, which is similar motion. Certainly, like bringing him in motion before the snap or at the snap to avoid contact. Those are the types of things that I think that Bill O'Brien can do that will get Taekwon to be a threat.
Right.
The stats are going to come from Taekwon. Like Taekwon's going to have to do that individually. But for Taekwon to be a threat, I think Bill O'Brien can do that with alignment, with play calling, with that type of stuff. You know, the other thing he did with Fuller was obviously play action shots, right? Deep post routes, deep overs, things like that off play action where the intermediate is sucking up the safety and then it becomes a one-on-one for the receiver over the top. Like those are the types of things that the coach can do. What I want to see out of Taekwon is certainly, look, where is he at physically, like in terms of his frame? You know, if he comes in and no one wants him to be 210 pounds and lose the 4.28, like no one wants that.
Defeats the purpose.
Yeah, but if he's 190 instead of 180, like that could be a big difference. And just his physicality and his willingness to kind of fight through some contact and finish plays and finish routes, not just catches, right? Like not just fighting for it at the catch point, but when he breaks the route off, is he able to kind of stave off a defender? Is he able to kind of run through the frame a little bit and through that contact to get himself separation? He is a big time X factor for this team, and it feels like you said, it goes hand in hand with Mac Jones. And if this offense is to hit its ceiling, then both those guys have to hit their ceiling, so they both have to individually perform.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's that Z position.
Yeah.
And that's probably where I know a lot of people think of Thornton as an X because he's 6'3".
Yeah.
I think it's that Z. And I know you just talked a lot about Taekwon Thornton, but to me, it's between Thornton and Bourne. They need somebody in that position, like truly producing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say pulling these numbers out of nowhere. I kept running that PFF like season simulator just because I was curious.
You're making fun of you for that earlier.
Good. Yep. Good. That thing. Well, yep. No, make fun of the simulator, not me.
Well, you know, yeah, it's a little bit of both.
I like Kendrick Bourne kept getting like 50 catches, 800 yards, like 5 touchdowns.
This is why I don't believe the simulator.
Well, no, but here's my point. Like, if they can get that stat line from the Z position, whether that's Bourne or Thornton, like that, they're in great shape, right? That's kind of the season you're looking for from that role.
Yeah. I think, you know, when we talk about the Z position, it's Wes Welker and Julian Edelman are one type of Z, and obviously Taekwon is a different type of Z, right? He's not going to be a jitterbug. He's not going to be, 5-yard ins and whip routes, and like that's not going to be his game necessarily. But that doesn't mean that he's not a Z. And when you say a Z, you mean a guy that is playing off the line of scrimmage.
Right.
So that allows him to move around. That allows him to come in motion. That allows him to play in the slot a lot. And to basically play off of the line so that he's not pressed up against, like an X. And this team really, I think, is still gravitating to Devontae Parker probably being the primary X guy.
I mean, they should.
Just simply because he's the best body type and best player for it right now. That leaves Taekwon as probably the natural Z in a different type of mold, certainly, than what they've had historically there. And then Juju it kind of becomes like a different. He's kind of an F, right? Like he's
was the, he the slot?
So the F is the other off the line receiver, right? Okay. So X is your X, you know, backside on the line receiver. Z is your flanker. Z is your move around guy. It's the guy that plays off the line too. And in three receiver sets, O'Brien calls it an F. Like it's the F receiver, which is your other off the line guy that's not playing on the weak side of the formation. So he's playing on the same side as the tight end primarily. That feels like Juju, and you know that position in O'Brien's offense plays a ton in the slot. You know that's a guy that's probably going to play 65% at least out of the slot, and you start to get into
that's what Juju should be,
right? And you start to get in some different things. So the question really is with this receiver group, other than the rookies, which we can get to here in a second and kind of end it with that, is when they are playing 12 personnel, Gesicki kind of becomes the F, right? Like he's the move tight end. Hunter Henry is still the Y. Like who comes off the field, right? Like is Tyquan then become an X, or does Tyquan come off the field and Devontae Parker stays on the field as the X? Like how does that situation sort itself out? But in three receiver sets, like, you know, I think that Tyquan is a natural Z. Like that's the guy that is your fastest, most dynamic player. And I think right now that's probably him.
Well, I think the beauty of it, if they're going to go back to true Earhart Perkins, right, is you do both, because if you're running the same play, like the same X's and O's and draw the lines forever, right?
Yeah.
But you run it once with Parker at the X, Thornton at the Z, Juju in the slot, Hunter Henry as your tight end, and then you run it again with Thornton at the X, Juju as the Z, Gesicki is the slot, and Henry is the tight end.
Yeah.
Even though it's the same, like, route combination, it's a very different play
That
has to be defended. That personnel grouping has to be defended completely differently with a different package.
Right.
So ideally, the answer to your question is sometimes this, sometimes that. I've been saying this for 2 years. The strength of this team's receiver group, I know they don't have a true number one, but I think there's legitimate strength and legitimate upside in the fact that there's really no overlap outside of maybe Borden and Thornton, but not even really. Everybody wins differently, and you can throw Gesicki and Henry into that as well. So when you can, and when they were at their best in the first O'Brien stint and early on with Josh McDaniels, this is what they did.
Yeah.
They don't run a lot of different plays. They just run the plays they run with different personnel, and they execute them at a very high level.
Yeah, it's
kind of have the perfect offense to get back to that.
It's window dressing. You know, they dress them up differently, and it looks a little bit different, but it's really this. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for all that, and it's gonna be interesting to see how they use all these guys that are. We will both fully admit, I think that none of these guys, they don't have a Tyreek Hill, they don't have a Stephon Diggs, they don't have a Davante Adams, they don't have an A.J. Brown. They don't have one of those guys that's just, you know, the most talented guy on the field. They don't. But they do have guys that they can mix and match with a little bit, and can place and do some different things. And if you can get Tyquan's speed to be a factor, and you can get Juju's catch and run ability to be a factor, and if you can get Gesicki's seam running ability to be a factor, then those things can put stresses on defenses individually, even if it's not like one guy that on Tuesday, you know, the Tuesday meeting guy like that. They still don't have that guy. We can fully admit that.
I just hope, you know, it was disappointing last year to see them come out in like my, and this isn't anything against any of these players specifically, but
yeah.
You know, Myers, Aguilar, and Parker all had like over an 85% usage rate week one.
Yeah.
And they didn't play Kendrick Bourne. And I'm not necessarily saying they should have played
Little Jordan Humphrey.
It was those three that was
remember
it.
That.
And then, yeah, too. When Thornton came back, they kind of pushed. Well, first, Jacoby Myers was hurt. And then they kind of pushed Nelson Aguilar out of the lineup. And they still just, it was just the same three receivers.
Yeah.
And they didn't rotate or mix and match at all. And that's always been a strength of what they do offensively. I really hope they get back to that, because this group, to me, is built to play offense like that.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, Juju's probably going to be a 90-something percent usage guy.
Yeah.
He's not going to come off the field.
Yeah.
After him, everybody else, Parker, Bourne, Thornton, Henry, Gesicki.
It's situational,
They need to be rotating all those. And I'm not saying it's 50-50 for everybody, but they need to be rotating all those guys in and out a healthy amount.
All right, let's take a phone call, and then we'll wrap it here. Jerry, what's up?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing today?
Doing good.
All right, so I got a quick question. Is there any way possible this season where we see, what's his name, Gonzalez, Jack Jones, and Isaiah Bolden on the field at the same time? And the reason why I ask is because based off them three alone, that's a lot of speed in one section. So I feel like we'll be able to play a lot of man-to-man press, but just wanted to get y'all thoughts on that.
Yeah, no problem, Jerry. And that kind of segues us perfectly because I was going to wrap it with the rookies, which is always, whenever we get a chance to first see the rookies, it's always a good thing to watch. And Isaiah Bolden, I'm not sure. I think Isaiah Bolden, projecting Isaiah Bolden, I don't know how you feel about this, Alex, as anything more than a special teamer at this stage, I think, is a little bit lofty. Like, yes, he's fast. Some of the film I have seen on him, his physicality at the line of scrimmage is decent. You know, he can do some of those types of things. I just wouldn't get too, I don't know. I can't get myself too excited about him on defense. I not yet, at least. Let's see what it looks like.
So if we are going to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. I said this when they drafted him. I wonder if he's a safety in the NFL.
Yeah.
I just look at the way he processes the game.
Yeah.
And his straight, I think he is better straight line speed than, you know, change of direction ability.
Yeah.
I think if they're going to play him on defense, and I'm with you, like, let's see him on special teams first and build up to that. But if he's going to play on defense, I want to see him at like true. If they want to go single high, I'm not saying you put him out there against the Chiefs or, like, out of nowhere, but I'm curious to look. Start out with the second team. What does he look like as a single high safety or even in two high? What does he look like playing free safety? Because if he is going to play defense in the NFL, I think that's probably a better role for him than corner.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there.
I think he played some safety at Jackson State.
They played a lot of zone. So, you know, I think that some of his interceptions, like, you could see some of that translating to safety, right?
Okay.
You know, like where he's kind of ball hawking, things like that. Wrapping it up here on the rookies, look, I think everybody knows that I'm excited to see Christian Gonzalez.
Are you?
Maybe just a little bit. But I think the biggest thing with Christian Gonzalez is I do feel like, and we, not going to lie, we haven't had the best track record of this in our time covering the team because of the way that they've drafted, unfortunately. But I fully believe in the fact that you can see it almost right away when a guy is just different. Like, when we're not talking about, you know...
You're talking about movement skills.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about, like, when I say different, I don't mean, like, Tyquan, who we know on a track can burn anybody out there, right? Like, you know, I'm talking about just is a freak. Like, just looks different. Looks the part. Looks the first-round pick worthy. And I'm hoping and I'm thinking that that's exactly what we're going to see out of Christian Gonzalez, where he just looks like somebody that is different than the vast majority of the rest of the players out there. The other two guys, look, this is a passing camp. And even though we just talked about it earlier, Trey Nixon being the star of the summer last year, frankly, if Kayshon Boutte or DeMario Douglas has any chance of hitting the ceiling that I think both of us think that they have the potential to hit, we got to start seeing it now. Like, this is, there's no contact. There's no reason. If you're a good receiver, you should show out in these types of practices.
Right.
So I'm not trying to put too much pressure on them. I'm just saying, you know, if we're going to see flashes from either one of those guys, it's going to come in the spring. So we'll see what those two guys look like as well.
Yeah, I looked it up. Isaiah Bolden only played 36 snaps at free safety last year compared to 592 as a slot corner.
Yeah.
So would be new for him, but again, I try it. Yeah, I'm with you on the receivers. I think Kayshon Boutte is going to get as much attention as maybe any player really outside of the quarterbacks in this spring session here. Really excited to see what he can do. I'm like back and forth. Like, DeMario Douglas is the kind of player that should tear up the spring, but I feel like the role for him is going to be that gadget, basically Marcus Jones role, right?
Yeah.
they're not going to tip their hand on that till they have to. We're not going to see that. That's being done in the closed practices. That's not being done when we're there. So
yeah.
I don't know how much we'll see him in like team drills, but one-on-ones, I expect him to be electric.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair assessment. I just think that either one of those guys, like I just said, it's a passing camp. This is not a full padded practice. If you can't get open in OTAs, you are not going to get open in the real thing, right? Like that's just the bottom line. It's got to start somewhere, and for receivers it often starts in the spring. All right, anything else that I missed? I don't think so. I think that about covers it. Like I said earlier, the trenches, we'll see who's out there, we'll see who's at left tackle, who's at right tackle. Those will be notes certainly, but you're not really going to grade them or like evaluate them,
right? It's more
much.
Just who's where. Yeah. I am excited to get the stopwatch out for Bryce Berringer.
That was what I was going to ask you about. So, in all seriousness, do you put any stock whatsoever about what happens in the spring with the specialists?
So this is, I think, the one,
because there's some pressure on these specialists now.
Yeah, this is the
especially
one,
especially Rowland. I mean, seriously, fourth round pick, like that guy needs to pan out.
Well, actually, there's less pressure on him than Berringer because Rylan's making the team. He's a fourth round pick.
I don't mean it like that, but like if this is another Justin Rohrwasser situation, then
that's fair.
It's not about the pressure on Rylan. It's more about the pressure for the scouting department that Rylan is.
Yeah,
right
that's
guy.
Fair. That's yeah. fair. I think this is the one position where you can start to evaluate, especially like hopefully. Well, I don't want to stand out and watch in the rain, but I remember 2021, we got that one day where it was like pouring rain at OTAs. You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And they kicked the ball the entire day.
Yeah.
This is the one spot
Alex
where
this is fever dream right there.
You know, you got a new holder, new kicker.
2 hours of kicking. Oh yeah.
New holder, new kicker. How are they working together? Yeah, you can start to evaluate this a little bit. I think Ryland's going to beat out Folk. It's just he's a fourth round pick. Folk didn't finish the season well last year. Berringer should beat out Waitman, but maybe there's more of a competition there.
Yeah, just because of the draft. Yeah, I mean, if you cut a sixth round pick, it's not like unheard of to do something like that.
He's also a guy that just, I think you can get Corliss Waitman or you can get Bryce Berringer on the practice squad. And if Waitman's not the guy, you make the switch however many weeks into the season. Whereas if you cut Chad Ryland, somebody's going to pick him up.
So I don't know how much like snap hold kick we're going to get in spring practices, because sometimes they don't kick as much field goals like that.
You know? We'll see it'll just be off to the side.
Right. That's that. Like, look, the Patriots need to have all their I's dotted and all their T's crossed this year, right? Like, we can't have any botched holds. We can't have any snaps. Not that, you know, Joe Cardona's snapping has really ever been a huge issue, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, they got to be good on the margins. And that's a new battery, right? Like that operation is new, and this is getting into the barth of it all. But let's be honest, like it's a snapper, holder, kicker has been for the last couple years, the majority of it has been Joe Cardona, Jake Bailey, Nick Folk, and now it's changed.
So a really interesting thing will be, and I normally do this, I might need two stopwatches this year, because I want to do this year, I might enlist you to help me with this, actually.
I don't know if I have it in me, honestly.
So the really interesting thing, because they had too many blocked kicks last year.
Yeah.
I think what I probably should be timing, or I'll get you to time while I do the hang times, is the operation time.
Yeah.
What is the time from snap to kick, both on the punt and the field goal?
Yeah.
That's what I'm really going to be watching, because their operation times last year were not good. And I never really went back and looked at it to the extent of, like, who was this on? On the punts, it's
great
usually pretty much on the punter. Yeah. But field goals, it can be on the snapper, it can be on the holder, can even be on the kicker, sometimes a combination. I'm going to be interested to see what the operation times are, because they need to be quicker this year.
So that's,
they weren't quick enough last year.
That's why you listen to this show. If you listen to this show, and we thank everybody that listens, but I want to really thank the diehards, because the diehards are listening an hour and 20 minutes in to hear Alex talk about operation
time. Let's be honest, Evan. You've covered this game a long time. Had you ever heard the term operation time before?
Before just now?
Yeah.
Yeah, from you like 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, now I know what it is. So
They're all big. So when I was in college and I covered the team in college, I was really good friends with the kicker on the team. And
D3 college football.
Yeah, D3 college football. We were watching the national championship, and I remember we sit down to watch the game, the team scores, and he pulls out his phone. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I want to see what their operation time is. Oh, the, like, yeah, natural, the, yeah. This team that's like everybody knows Mount Union's like the D3 powerhouse, right? Yeah, people know what that is. So he's like, you know, they're Mount Union. I want to see what they are compared to us. And it was off by like, they were slower than what his was by like 200th of a second. And you would have thought he won the Heisman with how proud he was. Like, yeah, we got a better operation. This is huge, huge to those special teams guys.
Big, big
stuff. So I'm curious what it'll be.
All right. So humor me for two more minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to cover the Celtics tonight.
I am going to cover the Celtics
tonight. So that's where Alex is headed, so you can check out his Celtics. We don't do Celtics coverage here, so I can plug your Celtics coverage and not, you know, be stepping on any toes.
On 98.5thesportshub.com.
Yeah.
It's also funny, like, I was ready, assuming there was going to be an OTA practice today, for people to be, like, really mad at us for not doing a show.
I know.
If there had been both, show would have been tomorrow.
Marine Matt was a trooper about, no pun intended, about all the different time changes and trying to lock down a time, but we didn't have to run into that issue. My 1 minute on the Celtics, because I you know me, I got to talk some Celtics in the middle of May. My 1 minute on the Celtics is I am not allowing myself to be excited or hyped up or anything for this game tonight. It is not a series until they win tonight. If they win tonight, then Evan Celtics footy pajamas is coming out, right?
Like Green Teamer Evan?
Yeah, Green Teamer Evan is out in full swing if they win tonight. Because then you start to believe, right? Like then the believe creeps in. Then they'll crush me in game six. But like that's when the believe kicks in. The one thing I really believe from a basketball standpoint now, not a Green Teamer Evan pom-pom standpoint, the Miami Heat, and we've talked about this off the air, the Miami Heat all playoffs long have shot the three out of their minds. Like they were like, I think they've been like 46% from three, right, in the playoffs. If they are finally, and not having Gabe Vincent helps, also because he's been one of the better knockdown shooters that they've had.
It's been 50% from deep.
Yeah. If they are finally regressing back to the mean, then the Celtics have hope.
Yeah.
I am not giving the Celtics hope strictly off the fact that the Celtics are good enough to just blow doors in four straight games against Miami, right? They're going to need some luck. And the luck comes in with Strauss, Duncan Robinson, Kyle Lowry, Kevin Love, obviously Caleb Martin starting to miss, right? Like
so here's the big thing. Kyle Lowry has not been good in this series.
Right, but that scares me for tonight, because Lowry have,
well, because he's starting now.
Does he have a throwback like in his vault game tonight?
So he's only
that's
played
kill me if he does.
More than 32 minutes twice in the last 3 years in any game. So that's interesting. Because
that's their whole run right now is Jimmy and Bam like in the middle of the court just drawing four eyeballs and then them either scoring or kicking it out to open shooters.
Which, by the way, is what the Celtics offense should be. But that's
been their offense, right?
Yeah.
Especially around Jimmy. If all of a sudden Jimmy's kicking it out to Duncan Robinson and he's airballing threes, then there goes their offense, right? So that's what the Celtics need to happen. The Celtics need Miami's role players to get cold.
So how long
deep.
Are we going here?
That's it.
That's the sign. All right.
I told you I had 2 minutes on the Celtics. 2 minutes.
All right.
But go cover the Celtics. Go have fun
with
that. Yeah. Alex and I will be back next week. OTAs are on Wednesday. We might do show Wednesday, might do it Thursday, but we'll definitely do a OTA recap show. So don't you worry. Have that right here on Patriots.com, Patriots Catch 22. Leave us a review, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check Patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.